Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Sunday marks the anniversary of the completion of construction on the Gateway Arch. We'll talk about the anniversary in just a couple of moments. But first, if you remember the 1972 presidential election, what you probably recall was Senator George McGovern's landslide loss to Richard Nixon and Missouri Senator Tom Eagleton's role in it. It's a memory revived with news of McGovern's death this past weekend. His dramatic loss was driven in part by the fact that McGovern chose Senator Eagleton as his running mate. He learned later that Eagleton had undergone electric shock therapy for depression and, after 18 days, dropped the Missouri senator from the ticket. The drama of those days is recounted in a new book titled The 18-Day Running Mate, McGovern, Eagleton, and a Campaign in Crisis. Its author, Joshua Glasser, joins us by phone from New York. Joshua, nice to have you with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
I so enjoyed reading the book because it reminded us of those days. And, of course, Tom Eagleton, a fixture here for so many years and a friend to many people in the St. Louis area. Let me begin kind of at the end before we pick up the story from the beginning. I just want to remind people that Senator McGovern lost to Richard Nixon 520-17. That's 1-7 electoral votes, and by almost 20 million popular votes. So my first question is, did Tom Eagleton cost him that election?
I don't think he cost him the election, but he cost him the margin of victory. I think it could have been much, much closer in the final tally of it all had he kept Eagleton, or had he handled the decision to drop Eagleton in a more straightforward way. The way in which McGovern ended up dropping Eagleton came across as completely backhanded and almost spineless, and it contradicted people's understanding of McGovern and what they loved about McGovern, if they loved him, which was his decency and his honesty, his candor, and the way he handled the Eagleton crisis seemed to contradict that. Yes, McGovern probably would have lost anyways, but it would have been much tighter. And if he had handled the Eagleton situation well, it would have set him up to be a real contender in 1976 or thereafter, which he no longer was.
Well, you've given us a partial picture of George McGovern. Give us a picture also of Tom Eagleton as he came into the story in 72.
Tom Eagleton was 42 years old at the time. He was the wunderkind of Missouri politics. He rose through the ranks from the age of 27 extraordinarily quickly, from circuit attorney's office in St. Louis, right through attorney general, lieutenant governor, and then senator. Everyone around St. Louis area, Missouri, expected big things from him. He was known in the Senate as a tremendously productive worker, and also throughout his career in Missouri, he was an incredible campaigner, tenacious debater, and McGovern saw in him someone who could help him bridge the gaps with the disaffected elements of the party, such as labor groups. Eagleton was someone who was very relatable to the many different fractions of the party that were dividing Democrats at that time.
What a lot of people probably have forgotten is the fact that Tom Eagleton was certainly not George McGovern's first choice for this post.
Exactly. George McGovern was desperate to get Ted Kennedy on the ticket. All polling told him that Ted Kennedy was the man who would give him the best shot at closing the gap with Richard Nixon. While the polling with the hypothetical McGovern-Kennedy ticket didn't bring him entirely, didn't close the gap entirely, it made it seem most viable, especially in the West. And the West was believed to presage the ultimate direction of the country in the elections that year. So, I mean, McGovern's political director, Frank Mankiewicz, said the only question on the staff was how many fingers you were willing to lose to get Kennedy on the ticket.
And so
McGovern wouldn't give up that hope and was left scrambling the final days. Yeah,
right down to the final minutes almost, he was after Ted Kennedy. and others. There were some others that came into the picture before Tom Eagleton.
Yeah, exactly. And McGovern asked Kennedy several times, and final day of the convention, McGovern hadn't sealed up the nomination until the convention, which was another reason that it's all delayed. But yeah, he asked Kennedy several times, and then he goes to Abe Ribicoff, Walter Mondale, Gaylord Nelson, also Kevin White, mayor of Boston, and for various reasons, they say no. And he also even, they're considering Sergeant Shriver at one point, but Shriver was out of the country in Moscow in business, so that's why they passed him up. So Eagleton, while McGovern didn't know him too well and had some apprehensions at first, he came highly recommended by some of McGovern's closest friends, such as Mondale, such as Kennedy, such as Nelson. So that is what ultimately pushes McGovern to ask Eagleton.
I will remind people that Sergeant Shriver came into the picture after Eagleton, post Eagleton in that race.
Exactly. Circle back to the Kennedy cousin, Shriver.
Right. Is this confusion and the indecision and waiting out Ted Kennedy the reason that Tom Eagleton may not have been vetted as well as he should have?
Yeah, it's definitely part of the reason because there was that irrational hope that Kennedy would eventually accept in the heat of the moment. And also, while Eagleton made it on all the short list, it was never really believed that it was going to come to him. And they're left asking these other nominees the final days of the convention. So, yeah, there wasn't enough time to vet. There were vague rumors of alcoholism, depression, mental illness in his family background, or it wasn't clear whether it was in his family background or relating to Eagleton, and it wasn't sure exactly where those rumors were coming from. So it never is nailed down that day before the selection last minute at 15 minutes before deadline for selection.
Not nailed down, but do you feel that Tom Eagleton was intentionally deceptive about his depression and his medical history?
He didn't believe, he wanted to believe that it was an issue that the country could move beyond. So he decides with his wife, they're contemplating what to do should Eagleton be asked. And they said, you know, we could accept the vice presidential nomination anyways, because this is an issue that if revealed in the campaign, the country, it'll be an issue for a few days and people would move beyond. And that could have been optimism on their part. Eagleton believed he was a cured man, that he had served 4 years in the Senate without relapse. This was 6 years in the past at that point. So Eagleton, it could have been delusion on his part, but he really did believe that he had learned to pace himself, as he said. But other people did think he was deceptive. But the context of the conversation, you have to remember, Eagleton was asked 15 minutes before deadline, as we said, and he was asked to be the nominee before there were any vetting questions. So, and the news of Eagleton's selection was already out, and people are celebrating in the room, and this is something that he had tried to keep private for his career because it didn't appear to affect how he did on the job. So it wasn't an atmosphere necessarily conducive to venting this secret. So think about this story is you could understand everyone's perspective. You could understand why Eagleton acted the way he did, and you could also understand the McGovernites' perspective, that this was something that everyone would presume would be a like damaging secret that the campaign could never move beyond, and they believe that Eagleton had stolen it from them.
I think it was very interesting, the fact that Barbara Eagleton, his wife, who, by the way, is a great friend of St. Louis Public Radio and someone whom we see a great deal of around here, that she was the one who basically raised this flag with him while all the rest of it was going on.
Yeah, very, very interesting. She was a constant source of support throughout the 18-day ordeal, and she, in the final days, as things are getting tough, is really gets Eagleton's head straight in terms of telling him, like, Eagleton, you got to handle this, or Tom, you got to handle it well, because if you handle this situation as you're capable of doing, you can be senator from Missouri for a very long time.
Another consideration we have to consider here is the fact that Tom Eagleton was very ambitious. He really, really, really wanted this job.
Yeah, exactly. That's another point that if he felt the mental illness piece was something that was disqualifying, he would never have floated his name as a nominee. He wouldn't have gone on ABC the night before he was selected and said, yeah, I would totally accept if I got the nomination. So Eagleton did a lot to promote his candidacy, and he desperately wanted the job. People always thought that he would be president and reach the highest levels. Like, it wasn't a surprise. I went through his papers that are housed at the University of Missouri Columbia, and a fascinating collection of documents, and you get letters from a very young age from friends, his family's friends. His father, Mark, was a very prominent lawyer in St. Louis area, saying, like, when you're president, how about a job as Secretary of the Treasury? So, I mean, yeah, they were joking, but there was always this idea that there were big things in store for him because he was so ambitious and so effective. I mean, he cut the backlog of cases in the circuit attorney's office by more than double. So he was so effective in office.
You're listening to Joshua Glasser, who is the author of The 18-Day Running Mate, McGovern, Eagleton, and a Campaign in Crisis. The 18 days, of course, covers that period of time that Tom Eagleton was Senator McGovern's vice presidential running mate before he was dropped by Senator McGovern. We're going to come back and continue our conversation. We'd like to bring you into it as well. Perhaps you have some recollections of the period or of Senator Eagleton. We'd very much like to hear from you at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. Send us an email if you like, talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air, or you can also reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back as we continue our conversation with author Joshua Glasser. He's the author of The 18-Day Running Mate, McGovern, Eagleton, and A Campaign in Crisis. And, of course, it refers to the 1972 presidential campaign of George McGovern and Tom Eagleton's role in that. Joshua, of course, all of this focused, for the most part, certainly on the senator's depression and his mental illness history, if you will, but more specifically on the electroshock therapy that he underwent. This, at that time, was really what brought him down, wasn't it, the fact that he'd undergone this treatment?
Yeah, depression was one thing, but electroshock therapy, that suggested quite another level of depression or mental illness for those that didn't necessarily understand. There are these scarring, one flew over the cuckoo's nest type images that come into people's mind when you hear that word, the connection just the word has with, like, electrocution or the electric chair. But also you have to remember that Eagleton's treatment with electroshock therapy is partly a function of location. Washington University in St. Louis was had a biological one of the leaders in promoting a biological understanding of mental illness and using biologically oriented treatments to treat it instead of the East Coast universities and East Coast hospitals that were at that time more inclined to the Freudian understanding of mental illness as depression and other types of ailments coming from the mind as detached from the brain, as detached from the biology of the brain. So, electroshock conjured up these scarring images, but it also enabled Eagleton to return to office relatively quickly than he would have without the slower treatments like talk therapy or with the psychotropic drugs that weren't up to the level that they are now.
We should point out that this therapy is very much in use still today, very much so, and that the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest came out about a year after the Eagleton affair, if I can put it that way.
Exactly.
And it was at this time that actually what he had gone through was bringing the electroshock therapy into greater acceptance up until that movie came out.
Exactly. Yeah, the book had come out already, but the movie hadn't. And one of the sad things about that movie, as powerful as it was for so many people, Eagleton had begun the process of showing that a former mentally ill patient or a former electroshock patient really wasn't someone to be scared of. He was it had helped him incredibly, and it had started to normalize it because so many people respected the way that he handled himself through the ordeal. I mean, yeah, some people thought that he should have come clean to McGovern up front about this issue that people presumed would be damaging, even disqualifying, but he defended his case forcefully and very, very well, and that won the respect, and people had a sense of sympathy for him as well.
And, of course, McGovern might have been more upfront because he had some skeletons along the same lines in his closet.
Exactly. He had some depression, too, and his family did as well, Eleanor and his daughter, Terry. And also he did have, I mean, yeah, he had other issues that are in the book as well, such as he did have an illegitimate daughter that he hadn't. Come clear. I mean, but that's not something that he would have come clear. But that sort of gave him sympathy or understanding that all people have flaws or things that aren't necessarily their most proud. Not to be, I guess. I'm trying to figure out the right way to say that. That he understood that people could have flaws, and that gave him some sense of understanding to Eagleton.
But he also had a fear of confrontation.
Yeah, he also definitely had a fear of confrontation, and that is what makes the ordeal so damaging in the end, because McGovern is telling him, I support you, telling Eagleton, I support you, I stand by you, 1,000% even. Yet, as the week goes on, he starts to doubt his initial instinct to back his running mate at a time of stress. And as his aides and campaign supporters, volunteers, are calling in with apprehension and saying, like, the fundraising is drying up. Could we trust Eagleton, someone with his history of depression, mental illness, with his finger on the metaphorical button, especially in a nuclear era? Like, is this a running mate we could live with? McGovern doubts himself and starts feeding that information to the press at the same time as he's telling Eagleton that he still supports him. So the mixed messages are what ultimately makes the episode so damaging This all comes out. It was maneuvering, but it was sloppy maneuvering.
What ultimately was the straw that broke the camel's back, and as far as Eagleton's concerned, his candidacy, as far as his candidacy remaining on the ticket is concerned?
Candidacy. Well, there's the Jack Anderson issue, which Jack Anderson comes, who's a muckraking reporter who comes forward with these allegations about Eagleton's history of drunk driving in addition, and Eagleton forcefully denies those allegations, and he was right, like the photo stats never existed. But that's a real turning point that shows that the McGovern campaign felt they could no longer really trust Eagleton. But and it looked like Eagleton was going to go anyways, but the other thing is the final day, McGovern calls Eagleton's doctors and gets the judgment from them that they don't necessarily at that time trust him in the presidency, the vice presidency, or if need be the presidency, especially in a nuclear era. Like, they believe that he was more than competent to be a senator. He had proven it. But there is this sense of exceptionalism of the presidency. Senator is one thing, but president is quite another. So that's like another justification for dropping Eagleton.
Let's get a couple of calls going here. We'll bring in Gina. She's calling us from Kansas City. Gina, thanks for being with us.
Good morning. I have a very vivid memory. I was a sophomore in high school in the state of Nevada at the time that this happened. And my first awareness of it was a Life magazine article with a full-page photo of Senator Eagleton looking devastated, standing next to George McGovern. And the caption on the photo was, "A question and a wrong answer." And that was the first time I became aware of all of the ramifications of the presidential election. It made me very interested in politics from there on out.
Gina, thanks so much for the call.
Sure.
Thank you so much for the call. Very interesting. And photography at that time was so interesting. And one of the things that sort of nailed Eagleton, he had a habit of sweating, and the sweating not a habit, but he was just a sweater, and it made him seem like he was in distress, even if he wasn't necessarily in that level of distress. Like, what his Eagleton's press secretary at the time, Mike Kelly, told me that the cameras would be off, they wouldn't be flicking or clicking, and then all of a sudden Eagleton would wipe his forehead of sweat. And that was the image that was front page as Eagleton is disclosing his history of depression. So images from that time are quite striking.
He's not the first or last politician to be done in by perspiration. No question about that. Let's bring in Susan calling from the Metro East. Susan, go ahead, please. You're on the air with Joshua Glasser.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My parents... I didn't live in this area at that time, and my parents were very disappointed. They considered Eagleton their guy. They were proud and then very disappointed in the way things turned out. But I have to say, I hope you will do a program on McGovern. What a great man in so many ways. Having worked on world hunger and childhood hunger around the world in the last decade of his life. I mean, many, many gifts there, but unfortunate the way it turned out with Eagleton.
Susan, thanks for the call. I think we ought to point out here and make it very clear that none of what we're talking about here is in any way a sign of disrespect for George McGovern. He has a wonderful record in so many ways, but the record is the record, and this particular episode is one that, not everybody came out of it particularly well.
Great point, Don. I mean, McGovern was a tremendous public servant who did extraordinarily good. And one of the painful things about this whole ordeal is it wasn't helpful for any of them, and it prevented McGovern and Eagleton from both reaching their highest aspirations, which was the presidency, vice presidency, respectively, because they believe that having those offices would enable them to achieve the most good throughout the world and effect the most change, ending the war, feeding the hungry, clothing the poor, cleaning up the air and water. So they had such noble aspirations for the country. It wasn't really about them. as much as what they hope to do for America. And yet, that is one of the hard things about it all. And within Missouri, you're right as well, Eagleton, Missourians felt terrible for the way Eagleton was treated, and it helped improve the event, as painful as it was. It did improve his standing in Missouri, even as high as it had already been.
And McGovern said I'm sure the day he died that the world would have been a different place if, in fact, he had been elected president, if all of this hadn't happened and his election had happened. Why did Eagleton insist? I just have one or two more questions before we have to run. But why did Eagleton insist to McGovern that he had a better chance of winning with Eagleton on the ticket than without, even with all this publicity?
Because he said it was sort of a lose-lose proposition, or you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But keeping Eagleton would have been more consistent with everyone's understanding of McGovern prior to this whole ordeal, and also dropping Eagleton would have infuriated, as it did, many people who thought of him as a hero, and McGovern essentially offended people who were sympathizers with the mentally ill, or who wanted to believe that former mentally ill could fully recover.
You know, and just as we wrap it up here, I have to point out that after all of this was over, Barbara Eagleton, during a dinner with Senator McGovern and her husband, said that Tom Eagleton was probably the most popular politician in the country when it was all over.
Exactly. Eagleton came out of it as a hero, and McGovern not so much. Although the incredible thing is, this is also a story of political rehabilitation, because they each served more terms in the Senate. Eagleton, two more terms, retiring on his own volition. And McGovern, he never got to be president, and he lost reelection in 1980. But he did. That didn't stop him from keep on trying and considering other runs, running a few more times. And, yeah, no, they're two incredible men that come together in a fascinating story, in my mind, at least.
Well, all the details are in the book, The 18-Day Running Mate, McGovern, Eagleton, and a Campaign in Crisis, written by our guest author, Joshua Glasser. Joshua, thanks so much for being with us, and again, congratulations on the book. It's a great read.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good day.
You too. Coming up, the Gateway Arch. Has it already been 47 years? What are your memories of that arch, by the way? We'll talk about that next. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.